My name is Debbie, and I am alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's a privilege for me to be the chairperson of this great organization of Alcoholics Anonymous. As I was coming this morning, I was just thinking that, you know, it is an honor to be part of this organization, and I greatly appreciate the committee people to ask me to do this. This morning, I would like to read the anonymity statement. I would like to open this meeting with the quiet time and the serenity prayer, Father. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay. Our topic today is letting go of our old selves, step 6 and 7. And I would like to welcome our panelists. Of course, you know, we all are from different places and different ways of life. We have different names and different faces, but we have one thing that's in common, and we're alcoholics, and that's why we're here. And we can be in a room full of strangers, and still we have one thing that we all can relate to, and that's us all being an alcoholic. And our first speaker today is from Cleveland, Ohio, and I would like to welcome her, Frances.
Good morning, ladies. My name is Frances Lipscomb. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. You know, it's still early in the morning, honey. Oh, you know, and I was telling my sponsor, my heart just boom, 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 boom. And then I had to realize that when I stopped being nervous, then I have to watch out, you know. I'm very grateful to be here this morning. I'm grateful for the community asking me. God has been so good to me, you know. And I think this morning is through people's prayers that I'm able to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I came from a hard rock life, you know. I was out there qualifying for 19 years, doing everything I had to do to get what I had to get, to be, get where I had to be. And I stepped on a lot of toes, you know, out there, and I got burned, and, you know, that in the dog-eat-dog world, you know. And I did a lot of things, you know. I'm not proud of things I did, but I did it. And I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I came in here not knowing who I was or what I was, you know. And I came in here full of fear, full of remorse, full of anger, full of a lot of things. And I came into these rooms and got into the steps, but when they told me about the first step, you know, I knew this is a step I'll continue to have to work on, because I was always powerless over something. You know, I knew I had powerlessness even before I picked up, you know, because I did a lot of things, you know, and coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and being sent downtown for juvenile detention for being incorrigible, you know, and all of these bad things, you know, that followed me through my life. Coming in here and meeting people like you, and but see, when I came in, they didn't talk too much about the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. All we had was the four absolutes and the cliches. And I kept working on me, and I guess through somewhere, you know, my life is changing, because after I took that fifth step, then I had to get on with the up two steps, 6 and 7. But I could see a change in me. You know, I could see a change in myself, because I wanted to have what these people had in the program, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you talk about character defects and shortcomings. And I know the willingness to ask God to remove them. And humility. And when I found out about humility, open mind to the truth, then I could be truthful to you if I got truthful to myself. And I just thought about these here character defects. You know, my sobriety date is November 3rd of 1970. And I came in here, you know, I'm just still... I'm going to be honest with you, you know, I'm still just a little bit better. You know, I'm just a little bit better. You know, you talk about these things, you know, and I wanted God to remove them, you know, because I was saying, you know, what people said in the program, you know, asking to move these things, you know, and I said, well, okay, I will, you know, and I had the willingness, but then again, you know, I still got some, you know. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm just a human being in the flesh. And I know today that I still have them because I still get backed up against the wall and people try to use it for a doormat. And then I pick up something there in my old ways. You know, I'm still striving, you know, so I know I'm going to continue to try to get better. I know I'm aware of all this, and I go to God in prayer, and I do things, you know, and then I go out and have a quiet time, and I say, God, why did I do that? You know, why did I do that? But I'm human. I'm human to err. You know, I don't ever want to think that I'm going to be perfect, because nobody's perfect for God. You know, I know I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to continue to strive. You know, he has removed so much from my life. He has removed a lot of things from my life. And I know today that my life is getting better and better and better and better. You know, I go to him in prayer and I go to him in meditation. And I know he's an awesome God. I go in there and I ask him, I can talk to him on one-on-one. And I can sit there, you know, I told him a lot of times and tears flow, you know, because I know where I was and where I am today. And I had to get on my knees and thank him. You know, I had to thank him over and over and over and over. You know, it's a constant thing with me, you know. And I prayed to ask him to change things in my life today. And you do change him. You do change him. But still, I'm not perfect. I'm still striving. You know, after being in the rooms for 24 hours, you know, God is good to me, and I want to continue to work on my soul and all these other things. I have a lot of faith, you know, and I was talking to my sponsor, Gene, and my baby, Pat, and, you know, and I, you know, and my baby helps me a lot, and my sponsor helps me a lot, you know, you know, we never, you know, talked about the steps, but the ladies come in today, they want you to go through the steps with them, you know, and I can walk with them through the program Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can be a power example, you know, and I can let them see how I am today, you know. I don't laugh at the man or woman lying down in the doorway, and if I can just lift them up and ask them to walk beside me, not behind me or in front of me, but right by me, and we'll struggle this road together. I always want to have a bump in the road to remind me of where I come from. You know, I don't ever want my road to be level. You know, because God is so good to me. You know, and I have to give him all the praise. I'm glad he gave me mercy instead of justice. You know, because I did so many things out there to be where, somewhere in some penitentiary. But it's through God's grace that I'm here in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I came in, I saw these women and men giving away so much love, and I didn't have it, you know, and I wanted to be like them, you know, but I had to change, and I watched these ladies, and they kept telling me it was going to get better. You keep coming here, friends, and you can find a better way of life, and this is what I found in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I go to a lot of women's conferences. You know, when I came in, I had to get used to women. Because I hung around with men, but men, you know. And I didn't want to hang around with women because I didn't want to hang around with slow people, you know. So I had to hang around with where the money was, you know. And being out there where it was, that's where I was at, you know. 24 hours a day, you know. I didn't know nothing about sleeping until I came into the program Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Because I was always out there to try to get a fast buck. They say the early bird catches the worm. I was always early. You know, so I was out there 24/7. So I'm coming in here now, and I'm trying to get a better way of life. But I don't want you to think that all these shortcomings and character defects is gone. Because even in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, people rub you the wrong way. You know, and I want them to know, hey, this, you got to get back, baby, because this is not where it's at today. You know, and I find myself getting into these jackpots. But that's okay. But then I go and I talk to God again. You know, and he gets better. But I don't want nobody to ever think that he can step on my toe and push me up against the wall and I'm not going to say nothing. You know, I'm going to step still on me. You know, and but I'm just getting a little better. I didn't have but 10 minutes to talk. I'm not going to take nothing from nobody else. I just want you to know a little about Francis. You know, so when I come up to you and tell you that I can love you unconditionally, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. And I'm going to close when all of you are my heroes and God is the wind beneath our wings.
Our next speaker is from London, England, Mary.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
My name is Mary, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mary.
And I'm sorry to disappoint you. I do not have a British accent. I could pretend to be British. With great difficulty. I was born and raised and got sober in Cleveland, Ohio. My sobriety date is the 28th of January, 1971. In August of 1972, I did a geographical. In sobriety, I moved to London, England, and for some strange reason, I'm still there. But largely has to do with work and opportunities along those lines. Standing up in front of you today is what I do for a living. I'm a university lecturer, and I lecture to foreign exchange students. So speaking to a group of Americans is no problem for me. Thank you. Also speaking to a room full of alcoholics is having a captive audience, you know, can revive a lot of my attraction to my disease, you know, and I could talk for hours on that given the opportunity. But we're here to talk about defects of character, and of course I haven't got any. I certainly didn't have any when I came into this program. Everybody else did, but I didn't. And it was a matter of circumstances, and it was all your fault that I had a problem, you know. Until the man who became my sponsor said, you know, when did anybody else ever force you to take a drink? And I had to admit that indeed did not happen. But and very quickly I kept buying tickets for raffles at the meetings. Remember those? You could get cigarettes or you could get the big book. And I think I won about 24 big books before I stopped buying raffle tickets. I wanted the cigarettes. I didn't want. I used to smoke in meetings in self-defense. You know. But, you know, I had no character defects and I had all the answers. So I would come to the meetings, you know, and, you know, I whoever would pick me up to take me to a meeting, you know, I was telling them how to solve the problems of the world, how they could organize their meetings, what they could do, what food they could serve, you know, how they could make coffee a little bit stronger, and so on and so forth. And this one woman took me into a meeting one day, and she said, Fairmont, you know, and she said to me, she said, "Now, honey," she said, "you just go in there and you sit down and shut up and listen." And that was the beginning of my spiritual awakening. I have the second thing that I regard as a spiritual awakening, and I think you can't take the steps unless you've had a spiritual awakening. You got to be open to them, you know. And you know, me with no character defects and all the answers was kind of closed. And the second one was I was sitting in my apartment one day and I was doing nothing. and I didn't feel guilty about it. So that was the second one. And then the third one was somebody asked me a question. They said, "Mary, you know all the answers to, you know, to everything. You know, tell us about this." And I said, "Well, you know, I honestly don't know." And I thought, now that's a spiritual step, you know, in the right direction. I don't know. I don't have the answer. You know, it's just like you said, the beginning of humility. I'm no better and I'm no worse than anybody else. And, you know, that's where I'd like to sort of start today. Because, yeah, we've been through the mill. We've done a lot of things to, you know, we don't qualify for this fellowship by sitting home drinking tea. Or because we're not here because our shoes are too tight. Or we don't like strawberry jam. Break out in a rash, you know. You know, we're here because we've got character defects. And being entirely ready to have them removed is all we're asked to do. Entirely ready. Didn't say, you know, okay, they disappear. Because without my character defects, where's my character? I've got, as I say, I love to talk. I love to talk to a captive audience. I also love to email, which is a character defect. If I get on the email, I'm a great champion of causes and all that sort of thing, you know. I find that my major character defect is control. I want to be in charge. I want to run everything, and I want to do it my way. And don't any of you think that you know better than I how things should be done. And I have watched, in the time I've been in fellowship, you know, that instinct come up in me and, you know, ruin relationships, ruin friendships. It's had me thrown off boards. Not my control, but their control, you know. They didn't want to do what I wanted them to do, so I had to go. And but one thing that that has also helped is getting that sense of control, that need to be in control, into proportion. So that for me, the character defects are all those little spiny things that are sticking out there that are making it hard for me to get along with all of you. And those spines have to come in, you know. They have to be integrated, you know. They've got to work together with other parts of me. I've got to make friends with my character defects. And, you know, in the 12 by 12, it describes them as really the seven deadly sins. When I came into this fellowship, I was overweight. And by virtue of drinking AA coffee, I lost about 40 pounds. And somebody said to me one day, they said, "Hey, Mary, you know, how'd you lose all that weight?" I said, "It's the 3B's diet." I said, "What's that?" And this was somebody that needed to hear my message. You see. The 3B's diet: no bread, no butter, and no booze. Yeah. So I lost all that weight, and then I stopped smoking, so I put it all back on again. But becoming friends with my defects, becoming friends with them, really was something that has been a great help in the, as you were pointing out, the continuous taking of this step. Because it's like the New Year's resolution: you make it and then you break it, and then you make it and then you break it. You're entirely ready and then forget it. You know, you humbly ask and then you humbly refuse to ask. And but this becoming friends is very, very important to me, because what I've seen with control run riot is that if I say I'm not trying to control this thing, it comes right back around and hits me in the back end. It comes right around and smacks me in the back. You know, everything I avoid eventually comes and gets me. And this has been what my experience in the fellowship. The things that I haven't, the character defects that I haven't attempted to let go of, that old self, that original self that came in here, ain't standing up here today, that's for sure. But, you know, God always gives me opportunities to work on my character defects. Every crisis, every trauma, every major life-threatening event in my life gives me a chance to work on those defects of character and to humbly ask, you know, for help. And this has been, to me, I think, the most important thing about my traveling the road of sobriety. Like you, I want lots of bumps. But I, you know, and the program gives me the tools to get around them or over them or just go through that minefield, you know, whatever it is. But every single time anything has happened to me in sobriety, I have been able to ask God. And God is in everybody, you know. God doesn't reside in people who can't let go. Let's put it that way. That's what I would say. You know, God is there, and God for me is reality, you know, and reality says, you know, Mary, you're not running the show, you're not the center of the universe, and, you know, well, I'll remind you periodically that that is not the case. And with that, thank you very much for letting me talk to you this morning.
Thank you, Mary. Our next speaker is Marcia from Duluth, Georgia.
I love you. I'm Marcia Wallace, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Marcia.
And I'm the baby up here. My sobriety date is June 30th, 1981, so I'm surrounded by a lot of new people. I got a long way to go. I wanted to start off, I have a new woman here with me. Susan is here. She's brand new in the program. She's never been in AA before. She's never been in a treatment center. And that's just a joy to me because all her exposure is through you. And this is great. But last night she gave me a little book, and it was a sweet gift. And I just flipped through it, and the first page I opened it to, it's just exactly what we're talking about here. And it's a little prayer that says, "Dear Lord, some of us need to sing a new song. Will you teach us the words?" Isn't that great? Help us to sing. Help us to sing in harmony with the Holy Spirit so our song will delight your heart. And I think that's a terrific way to start this day. But I love what you were just talking about, learning to love our character defects. I have a gentleman in California, Clint, who has been just my saving grace this year. He's been so helpful to me with in the last couple of years. But one of the tapes that he spoke on at a retreat, he talked about accepting and loving those parts of me that's never going to get it. And I appreciated that because I'm one of these egomaniacs with an inferiority complex who came in this program and had to be perfect in all ways because that's all I ever knew. And I had to do everything just right and to achieve and to strive because I thought those standards set for me were always too high, and they were so high. But I always thought I could achieve them because the only way I was going to get any love or approval would be to do that. And I've carried those defects with me into this program. And I love what you said. This year I have had the last few years, several years of my life, God has been removing. He tests me like silver and refines me like silver and tests me like gold and puts me in the fire. But he's never far away from that fire. And I think that what's been the greatest experience for me in the past couple of years, I don't have to be a doormat anymore. The people pleasing. Mary mentioned last night, pleasing people that I don't even want to or trying my best, and it's that damned if you do and damned if you don't. You try and try and try, and you're doing the best you can, but cannot even accept your own limitations, and that there's just some people who are going to just knock you down. And I couldn't accept that. It's like it's got to be always me. I've got to keep trying on this. And it's tied in with that being a worthless human being. You know, it's not even a matter of I made a mistake. So learning to love the defects of character and accept them. And to know, too, that God's put them there. I was thinking this morning about letting go of our old selves. And for me, it's been real helpful to get myself down to a few. That's been my big hang-up because my selves are really out there. But, you know, through the experiences of life, they're getting fewer and fewer. And the Big Book tells me that it's a place that I think is real important for me right now. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. And I've learned to do that. I am learning to do that. I'm the baby. I want to always think I don't know anything because I don't know anything. This control issue, if the people, the way people see me and feel about me, if they only knew how I feel about me, how much I have just hated my guts for so long. And when you're finally harnessed, though, to a power greater than yourself, and you really start to believe that God doesn't drop you and let you off, or he never takes you anywhere. His will is not going to take me anywhere that his grace isn't going to keep me. I am become so aware of that this year, because the last few years, my health has deteriorated. I have lost family members that I thought I could never live without. I have lost friends. I have alienated people. I have my very soul has been tortured beyond belief. And yet God has loved me so much. That's the reality, that still voice that comes to us. He loves me so much that we're all here today. The miracle of this program is that he loves us. He has chosen us for some special, special purpose that only each one of us can do. And he wants anything that's in the way. You better be careful. I've prayed that third step prayer, remove from me whatever's standing in the way. Oh, and the seventh step prayer. What I don't know is that I don't get to remove the defects. I don't get to choose them or when they're going to go. You know, and boy, howdy, this past year I have been stripped, just stripped bare. But it says, too, we're in the world to play the part, not how you do things. And I love that. I appreciated that because I've been so criticized for how I do things. And believe me, I've criticized me more than anybody else could have. And I don't have to be that way anymore. But I don't get to do this entirely ready. I'm 19 years later. I'm sort of entirely ready. But the defects have served God well. My greatest weakness has been God's greatest opportunity. And that's been what has gotten me to, and I've stayed here. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have gone through them a million times. Clint also gave me something this year that has been so valuable for me. And it has been the year from hell, if you want to put it that way, but it has been the greatest opportunity for growth. And if I see, I don't see my life as a problem to be solved so much as I see it as a gift to be opened. And it's a matter of, he told me, he said, okay, Marcia, you know, you've done and done and done. How about being? I don't know how to be. I don't know how to be. But he said, here's a little prayer. And say it, in the, you know, let me set aside everything I think I know about me, about you, about this program, and about these steps for an open mind and a new experience of you and me and about these steps and the program. And that has meant so much to me. And this control thing, I really don't want to control your life. I don't want to control mine because I can't. I found out this year through my dad went through a terrible illness, and God knows the people in Alcoholics Anonymous just held me up and were the wind beneath my wings. But I came into situations talking about powerlessness. Boy, howdy, do I know I don't have it. I am grateful to be alive, and I am grateful to be here today. You mentioned all that stuff that we bring in here, the anger and the pain and the sorrow. That's the stuff he's really got to, it's got to move out of the way. Every day he wakes up, it's like, Marcia, we've got to do something with you. And he keeps doing it, and I'm still on my feet, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, and thanks to the sponsorship. My God, the strength of that. And accepting the humanness in me has been very tough, but I've joined the human race, and I'm grateful to be there. And the people pleasing, if you don't like me, that's too bad, because there's parts of me that just ain't going to never get it, but that's all right, because God loves me no matter what I do. I don't even have to improve. I don't have to get better. I don't have to do nothing. He loves me, and he accepts that. And I love you. Thank you.